Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
My name is Angelo Carasone, better known as Stop Back on Twitter, and primarily I spend my time trying to debunk right-wing lies that permeate our media, and there's, you know, one of the places that we do it is on Bob Carson's show.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour. And I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hi, this is David Levitt, your host from SYM Radio. SYM Radio is helping raise awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, and human trafficking through our partners. We also raise awareness that people with disabilities can do whatever they set their mind to through the love of God and Christ. And we're proud to be an affiliate with Carson's Corner, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Jay Ray and Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio and also at SYMradio.com/live.
This is your host for The Missing and Abducted. Most often when a child is abducted, the media will be reluctant to air a story about the alleged abduction of a child. According to the State Department statistics, there are about 3,000 children currently missing who have been abducted by a parent and taken out of the U.S. illegally, and this is a growing phenomenon. Every day a child is suddenly ripped from the life they know, whether it be parental or stranger abductions. And it should be our responsibility as citizens to help bring awareness to these abducted children and the major impact that it has on the families that are left behind. And that is why we have this show, to raise awareness to missing persons and parental stranger abductions, and keeping you updated on what is current in the news on these missing cases and the found. If you are a left behind parent of a stranger or parental abduction and want the opportunity to explain your story to the general public, or know of someone who needs help, then please email us at symradio@yahoo.com.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
Corner in conjunction with Speak Your Mind Radio, hosted by David Levitt. We have a great show for you today. Let me bring on my co-host for this evening, David Levitt joins us. David, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Very, very good. We're very excited about this show and the opportunity to bring to the general public some heartbreaking stories in you know, what's going on and everything. And we have a lot of people out there listening. And why don't you explain what we have coming on or what we have coming up today on the show?
Okay. Well, first we have Willie C. Stanberry Jr. His father has been missing for over 6 years now. His father is a 79-year-old Cleveland man. He's been missing since December 7th of 2006, and his family is asking for help to find him. Willie C. Stanberry is an endangered missing senior citizen. At the time of his disappearance, he was 73. He's now 79 and will be turning 80 in December. he will be turning 80 shortly. He was last seen wearing a baseball cap, a beige jogging suit, suede jacket, and he wears glasses, walks with a limp in his right leg, and he has black balding hair, brown eyes. He's 6'2 and 210 pounds. Now, Willie Chuck Stanberry was last seen at two locations on Thursday, December 7th of 2006, at approximately 7:15 p.m. near the intersection of East 89th Street and Grand Avenue, where he owns property, and then at a Shell gas station where he got on at East 123rd in St. Clair at approximately 7:45. And that was the last place that he went missing. he was, at the point when I spoke with Willie Jr., his son, earlier tonight, he was a musician. And actually, you have that from that PSA that we created for him. If you could actually play that, because have to run to the bathroom. So if you can go ahead and play that clip, and then we'll come back in, and we'll hopefully Willie's on the line. He said he'd be calling in about 8:10. We also have Tara, who was an advocate for Willie, and she's in the chat room, and she will be also calling in tonight too.
That's great. Yeah, let's do that. Let's play the Willie Stanberry Senior PSA so people can become more acquainted with this case. We'll be right back after this very important PSA.
Hi, this is Tony Luke Jr., a.k.a. Joey the Nail Nardone, and you're listening to Justin Ray Harvey.
Dan Bush. I sing Fight to Survive in the movie Bloodsport. You're listening to Justin Ray Harvey.
Hello, this is David Levitt of SYM Radio. Here at SYM Radio, we're raising awareness to missing persons, parental stranger abductions, human trafficking cases, and giving left-behind parents of parental and stranger abductions and human trafficking the opportunity to explain their stories to the general public and their journey to find their abducted children. Justin Ray Harvey has been an advocate for SYM Radio since June of 2012, and you're listening to Justin Ray Harvey.
This webcaster uses Radio Amber, the Internet Radio Amber Alert System, helping to keep your children safe. A public service from the Internet Broadcasting Community and this station.
Hi, this is your host from SYM Radio with a public service announcement. We have an endangered missing senior citizen alert. He is a 79-year-old Cleveland, Ohio man who has been missing since December 7th, 2006. He was 73 at the time of his disappearance, and his family is asking to help find him. Willie Chuck Stanberry was last seen at two locations on Thursday, December 7th, 2006, at approximately 7:15 p.m., near the intersection of East 89th Street and Grand Avenue, where he owns property, and then at the Shell gas station, where he got gas, on East 123rd in St. Clair at approximately 7:45 p.m. He was driving a 2001
Hunter Green Ford Focus with Ohio license plate EAU8688. When he went missing, he owned three houses, was a gospel musician, had a girlfriend, and talked to his grandchildren every day. He has not been seen or heard from since the evening of his disappearance. His race is black, with black balding hair, brown eyes, 6 feet 2 inches tall, and weighs 210 pounds. Wears glasses and walks with a limp in his right leg. He was last seen wearing a baseball cap, beige jogging suit, and suede jacket. If you believe you have any information regarding this case that will be helpful in this investigation, please contact the 24-hour confidential information line at 216-367-9035. For more information on this case also, you can visit their Facebook page at Missing Willie C. Stanbury Sr. And for other information on all other cases, please visit us on Facebook at facebook.com Missing and Abducted. This has been a public service announcement brought to you by SYM Radio and Carson's Corner, a public service for surrounding communities and the internet broadcasting community.
Okay, we're back live here on Carson's Corner. David, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that was a PSA regarding the case of Willie Stanbury Sr., and we have two people on the line, presumably Willie Jr. and Tara, so I don't know which one is which. We're going to bring both of these calls on the line. We'll start with the 561 area code first. Hello, welcome to Carson's Corner in conjunction with Speaker Mind Radio. This is Bob.
Hi, Bob. This is Tara Pertenz-Eagle-Weber, the advocate for the missing.
Hi, thank you very much for calling.
Thank you for having me this evening.
Hi, Tara. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having us.
We're gonna go to Willie Jr. here now, who's on the line. Willie, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good under the circumstances.
That's good, Willie. Hi, Willie.
How you doing, David?
Good. Thank you very much. I really appreciate all the information that you're able to give us. And
well,
I know that Carla has more information, and she will be popping in here shortly. She's probably getting home from work. But actually,
she will be on.
I'm sorry, excuse me?
She hasn't walked in as of yet, but as soon as she walks in, she'll be coming right in.
Yep, okay. Well, if you can go ahead and let the audience know about how Willie went missing.
Well, on December 7th, 06, he went to a friend's house. They were sitting around talking. It was one of his fellow gospel musicians. Which time he received a phone call or gave a call to his girlfriend, told her he would be on his way. His friend physically watched him get in the car, ride up the street, and make a right-hand turn, and that was the last we saw or heard of him. At that point, my wife, when I got home from work, my wife told me what was going on. My sister had called and told us that he was missing. The very next day, I went and went to all the police, not to all the police stations, but the East Cleveland Police Department, all of the TV stations, physically crying, begging to see if anyone would give me some help, and was actually turned down by everyone except for Channel 19.
Wow. And Channel 19 has done, and actually I spoke with you earlier tonight, I actually did go to see if we could pull up some of the archives from the interview that they did with you back at that time, but evidently it's not in their archives. So I know that some places they hold their archives for so long, and then they're no longer available.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm pretty sure that my wife, Carla, has access to him or know how to get a hold to him. Once she comes in, she'll be able to give you a little bit more of what that entails.
Now,
Willie, when you went to the police department, what did they say to you?
Actually, I talked to Chief Patricia Ann Lane, who brought me in her office and told me this is her baby, this was her case, and she was going to do everything possible to help me. What she did was pulled out a pile, a big pile of papers, but she never opened up the folder. So I don't even know if that was even my father's case. To this day, I still don't know if that was his case or not. Since then, she's been released. They have no writings, no nothing. And basically, East Cleveland has done nothing.
That's an absolute shame. It really is because, you know, David and I, we've been doing these shows for the better part of a year now. And I hate to say this, but it seems more often than not that this seems to be the response of many police departments throughout the country, where they don't put their diligence into any of these cases, and you know, unfortunately, it leaves you know family members like yourself in the dark, and it frustrates me to hear this.
It's very frustrating. I actually had another reporter by the name of Carl Mundy come in and do an interview with us. He asked us a series of questions, but one of the main questions, which never stays in my head, was if we went to the police station, would they have a police report? Me and my wife both told him they would say no. Carl Mundy asked us if we had a police report. My wife went into her section of papers and pulled out the actual police report. Carl Mundy again said that if I go down to East Cleveland, they would tell me they don't have a police report, and we told him yes. About 15, 20 minutes later, he called us back after he went down to the East Cleveland Police Department, and they verified what we told him they were going to say, that they didn't have a police report, even though he had saw one. He saw the original one.
Wow. So you reported this to the police department, and there seems to be some discrepancy as to whether or not there's even a police report. I find it absolutely amazing that you could have a missing person here and not have a police report.
We have one. We have the original. They the ones seem not to have one, and that's the one that's baffling to me. If we have a copy, you should have a copy of this.
Right, exactly. I want to bring in Tara here to the discussion. You're obviously very, very familiar with the details. What is your reaction to the police handling of this case?
I think expanding on what you had initially, I think the problem in the United States with missing people is when you are over 18, you know, they give you the line of you can be missing, and then when you're under 18, you probably ran away.
Right.
So it's really a difficult thing to try and change a culture of perception on how they view people going missing. And, you know, really listen to the families. And that, from my perspective, I supported several families in Cleveland for many, many years who had missing loved ones. And unfortunately, and it's not just Cleveland. You know, like you said, it's all across the country where there is problems investigating or, you know, not following through or, you know, and that was one thing that, you know, I encouraged, you know, was for them to keep the documentation and keep the police report and everything. And I, being an advocate and a social worker, I was astonished when they, East Cleveland, said they didn't have the police report. And, you know, we knew they did.
Yeah, that's an absolute absolute disgrace. And, you know, it seems to me that there's a lot of implications here to the fact that, you know, if they don't have a police report on file, then how can we assume that they've done any type of investigation or done their diligence into this case? It's really, really remarkable. I mean, you know, you think of a lot of high-profile cases where there's a lot of media attention, and, you know, if the police department didn't have a police report on the case, then, you know, there would be all hell broken loose. Willie, I want to go back to you here. Since your father has been missing, have you had any contact with the police department? Have they reached out to you at all to update you on any new potential leads, or has it just been, you know, you just trying to find out, struggling to just talk to members of the police department?
It's funny you ask that. I haven't had any contact with the police departments whatsoever. This is a funny story, but it's not funny. I was trying to get the Cleveland police involved, so we were trying to fill out another police report. At that time, when we told them that we had one in East Cleveland, they said that it should have been in a database where it should cover everything. But when they looked into the database, it wasn't there, so they physically called East Cleveland and told them over the phone how to put the report through over the database. And not only did it just cover Cuyahoga County, but it covered the United States. They didn't even know how to do it. So it was negligence all the way around. I think they never really took it serious, even though I told him he was 73 years old, where they kept telling me that he could have just walked away. But he was 73 years old. What was the possibility of him just walking away? He only has one eye, which was the reason why he wore glasses. He was in a car accident, so he had a serious limp in his right leg. He owned homes. He had a pretty good cash flow coming in. He had a pension. So he had no reason financially to just want to walk away from his family. He talked to my nephew every day at noontime. Every day. He talked to me at least every Sunday, 3 to 4 hours. So I knew that he just didn't walk away. He has 14 or 15 brothers and sisters. It's over 1,000 of us, nieces, nephews, and cousins in Cleveland alone. So his family was too big where he would have just walked away. It wasn't a reason for him to walk away.
Right.
And that's what they was trying to push into our heads, that he just walked away. He put all his money under the mattress, and he just walked away. And I just believe that. I never believe that, and I just will never believe that.
You know, David, I want to go to you momentarily, but I got to tell you, when I hear these circumstances, my heart really goes out to you and your family, because, you know, it's one thing to have a missing relative, missing father. I mean, I lost my father. My father passed away in 2005, and I knew, you know, where he was. I knew he had passed away. So it's one thing to have a missing father, a missing relative. That has to have a tremendous impact on your life. And secondly, it's very, very bad to have a police department that seemingly is not cooperative and not working with you. So, you know, I almost feel like you must feel helpless, in the sense that you have a police department that seems to have already made up their mind. And, you know, you're left in the dark here. It's like, what really, if the police department doesn't want to invest resources in this, if they don't want to, you know, do their job, I guess, you know, one of the few avenues that you have is to try to create some sort of public outrage about this, create public awareness to pressure the police department into doing something. Because, you know, David, I'm sure you could attest to this, that, you know, many cases that you've dealt with, you have police departments sometimes saying the same things, and it's not until a fire is lit under them that they actually begin to work. And it's a shame that it takes that much effort, you know, for them to do their job.
Yes, yes. And, I mean, and, of course, you know, with you know, the finding of Dina and Amanda, you know, you saw out there, you know, that the police department there in Ohio, they were doing a lot of things for, like, you know, on Missing Children's Day, they're raising the awareness of the people that are missing there in Ohio. But, you know, it takes us advocates, and it takes people in the community to actually put pressure on the police department to actually find somebody or to bring awareness to these cases. I mean, we've had one where she was found, it was Selena Cass. Now, that was here a few years ago that got me started in being an advocate for the missing. And, you know, they found her body, you know, not pointing fingers, but people seem to think that the stepfather had something to do with it. And you look at some of the interviews that the stepfather was in, and you can just see that, you know, he knows something. And, of course, you know, you have a family relative that was on a sex offender registry list, and that was there at the home at that night. And, you know, nothing to this day, and it's been over 2 years now, and, you know, poor Louisa, she has not had any justice at all in bringing someone to justice and convicted for this crime. Because the last person that was to see her in the house was her stepfather and the person that was staying there in the house.
Willie, you described your father, and your father seemed to be a very, very successful and interesting person. Do you have a feeling as to, you know, what you think happened?
Yes, actually, the day before he became missing, I talked to him. He said, "I'm gonna be all right tomorrow. I have a lady taking care of my houses, and I have a lady taking care of my bankruptcies, and I'll be all right tomorrow." Well, when tomorrow came, that's when he became missing. Now, this is just my thoughts. I think that when his houses were refinanced, they told him that the money wasn't there, but in actuality, the money was there. By him being up in age, they took advantage of his slow reflexes. And when instead of giving him the money that he was promised, I think they did something to him. I can't put my finger on who actually did it, because if that was the case, I would know, and this case would be solved. But I believe there was a mortgage scam involved in this. Also, let me bring this up, too. The mayor of East Cleveland talked to my wife on a couple of occasions late night and would say stuff to her like, "Why are you looking for him? He can be at the bottom of the lake in his car."
Wow.
Now, what would make a mayor of the city that he's paying taxes in, make statements like that? Unless he heard something or he knew something.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely inappropriate at the very least. I mean, it seems that there's so many different implications here. Willie, have you had any type of leads at all? Because, you know, obviously the police department is kind of stonewalled you. Have you had anything? I mean, anybody call into a tip hotline or just anything at all?
See, now that's where the problem came in. We had got involved with another outfit called Black on Black Crimes, which everything was supposed to have been going through them. Whether or not anybody called and left tips, we don't know. We don't know if they didn't take it seriously or if anybody ever called. And that's what kind of brung us to a standstill, because we didn't we didn't have anybody that could lead us, that could tell us anything. If it hadn't been for Tara, myself and my wife, we wouldn't know what we know now. It was me and my wife who took to the streets at night, going to all the little dead ends where they burn cars, where they steal cars and strip them. We was looking like criminals, actually, as we was looking. We took the investigation into our own hands. Tara gave us sanity because she was able to talk to us and give us a kind of guidance as to which way to do things, how to do things. She set us up with the attorney general, the congressmen. We went to a ball and we met a lot of people through Tara, which we gave our story to, but it's just nothing has never panned out. Nothing has been said.
Did they find the car, really?
They never found the car. They never found him. They never found a shoe, a hat, nothing. My wife is right here. She can go into more details for you.
Sure.
Hi. Pretty much, Tara showed me how to contact the congressman of Ohio and the attorney general. They also wrote both police departments and told them that they had to help us, but East Cleveland, the mayor told me no government official could make them do anything.
That's really unfortunate. How long ago was that? Were you in contact with Congressman?
That was around 2007 and 2008. They sent me letters, you know, telling me that the law enforcement had to help us, and I told, you know, I wrote them back, and they emailed me, and some of them called, and they couldn't believe that they wouldn't help. The Cleveland Police Department wanted to help, but East Cleveland refused to release any information.
Wow.
That they have. Even the private investigator tried to do it. Once the mayor told me that he could be in the bottom of the lake, he said it several times, go on with our lives. That's when I told my private investigator, and with God being on our side, he was able to get with one of the news channels in Cleveland to have them to search the lake. So they didn't come up with anything, but every time I tried to call and talk to a law enforcement, I got the runaround. I got sent to different departments, the dog permit, you know, department and everything. And then I was told, with me being a daughter-in-law, that I had no rights to talk to them. So the family appointed me spokesperson because everybody was going through a thing with that being, you know, his father, that being their brothers and sisters, and they're in their 70s and 80s. So I took it upon myself to do it. And I even told the Senator Brown, I said, out of all these years, I've never did anything against the law, but they make me feel like I've committed a crime.
Right.
And I'm like, that's, you know, not fair. They won't talk. They won't talk to the private investigator. They won't talk to anyone.
Yeah, this is, hearing this, it's almost, I can't imagine how you feel. It almost feels as if the police department is, you know, is almost aiding and abetting, what happened here. I mean, it just seems that, you know, they're stonewalling you, not working with the authorities. And you know, and the thing about it is, Carla, is that this took place pretty much right after Willie Sr. was missing. So if they're giving you this much resistance, you know, pretty much, you know, I guess not too far after he went missing, now it's the clock is really running down, and now it's, you know, it's 7 years later, almost 7 years later. And it's going to be hard to even get them to lift a finger. I find this just absolutely remarkable. Tara, Are you renewing efforts to try to reach out to individuals to pressure authorities to release information and to investigate them? Is there any new developments in that area?
No. Our private Tara has still been working on it, even though she moved to Florida. With our private investigator, Mr. D, he had I think it's assistant attorney investigator that she even went through some stuff, and she was like she couldn't believe how the doors were being shut.
Right.
That, you know, East Cleveland didn't want to talk about it. And then when they did a news segment of how East Cleveland was handling the case, East Cleveland called the detective and said, okay, we want to help you guys. You know, we want to get this solved. We want to help. And then he said he heard nothing else from them. They told him that they were tired of the news media making them look bad, people calling. They wanted to help, and when he went to call them back, they still gave him the runaround. They still wouldn't answer his call.
Well, David, do you have any thoughts? David? Hello?
Hello? Did he get cut off?
Yeah, here I am. Okay.
My cell keeps going in and out. So, now what was your question?
Well, did you catch anything that Carla was saying?
I got some of it about the police department not helping her out. That's about all I got.
Right. Carla, I want to go back to you. Willie was telling us about what he thought might have happened, and it really sounds very, very sinister. Obviously there's major concerns here. I mean, these different things do not add up, and the fact that they found no car, and I'm presuming that, you know, Willie Sr. was fairly well known in the area. So, you know, if he was around, if he was in the area, presumably people would see him. And I know you guys have done a lot of work. You probably would have ran into somebody that would have seen him after the date he went missing. And so, I got to ask you, are you on the same page with Willie Jr. about what you think may have happened to Willie Sr.?
Yes, because I was the one that when the police wouldn't help, I would go on the internet, look up different things. I pulled all his mortgage stuff. I talked to some people that had last talked to him. And there was one lady in particular, he didn't make sense. He didn't make sense of some of the things that she was saying. And even at the time, the chief of police, when she tried to talk to her, he would ignore her, and she'll tell her that I need you to come in and talk to me. She never would. Well, within maybe a year of that, police chief got fired.
Mm-hmm.
And when she got fired and the private investigators tried to go and talk to her, he sent his wife to make her feel more comfortable, and she basically said, I have nothing to say, you have to talk to my lawyer.
Sure. Now, do you still have a private investigator working on this case?
Yes.
Okay. That gives us some hope. I mean, I wish that there was somebody, because I do a political show, and I speak to investigative journalists, and this really seems like a case that you'd really almost see a movie based on because of these circumstances. And have you had, how have the news media recently, have news outlets been covering the story, because, you know, when Dave and I were preparing for the show, we didn't find a lot of articles about this. I mean, David, was it you or they were saying that there wasn't a lot of information on this case? His cell phone must be cutting out. But
no, it's not a lot. The private investigator was able to get one of the newsmen to talk to us, to interview us, and that was about a year ago. They aired it last February.
Mm-hmm.
And it's another one that they were trying to do coming up to when he was missing. But a lot of news media didn't want to talk to us because of the police didn't give them the okay.
Oh, wow, really?
To talk to us. But there was one channel that had compassion and was like, I'm still going to come into your house and talk to you. Even the news person was told that we never filed the missing persons report. He kind of laughed at it because I had just gave him a copy of it. And, you know, he asked them, and they was like, oh, they never filed a report. And he was like, oh, okay. And he told his cameraman, he was like, we got them. They lied.
Wow.
Yeah.
No,
is this Carla?
Yes.
Yes, Carla. Would you have access to that for my records? And it's something that, you know, that we can, you know, that people can actually look at. I don't know if you have access to that at all. Did I lose you?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. All right. That was my question, is if you have a link to that you could possibly post on the Facebook page for people to actually see and just to, you know, to know that they were lying when they said that there was no police report filed.
Right. We have where they aired it. It's on Channel 19. I can look it up.
Okay, yeah, because I went earlier to try, and I, you know, did keyword searches for Willie, and nothing really came up.
Mm-hmm. Right. But no, they didn't, like, even with the Attorney General, he didn't put anything on there until the private investigator got to pushing some issues, and that's when the district attorney was talking to him, and they pushed some more stuff. And he was like, he couldn't believe that it was nothing out there. And the only thing I have a problem with is, and it kind of hurts my heart, is that the girlfriend died, which that's where he was supposed to go to. The last person that saw him, his buddy, has died.
When did the girlfriend die?
She died, it'll be 2 years in August. She had cancer.
And the last person I've seen Willie Senior alive was died.
He died maybe a year before she did. He had lost his son, and they said he buried his son, and he died that night.
Right, wow.
So it's like two key people that they needed to talk to. They're no longer here.
This is sad.
It's, I mean, I'm speechless. I can't believe that this is going on. You know, I mean, the way the Cleveland, you know, the way the police department is, and then saying that there was no missing report filed when Carla has the copy of the report.
Right.
To show the investigator. This would put flags up in anybody's head that's listening.
Well,
right.
You know, and another disturbing detail of this is, Carl, as you alluded to, the fact that the police department would be against news reports about this case. Now, why in the world would a police department, which their job is presumably to find this person,
mm-hmm.
why in the world would they object to news reports coming out you know, highlighting this case. I mean, you know, it seems weird. And I'm not someone that I generally support law enforcement. I have a college degree in criminal justice. My associate's degree is in criminal justice. I work in a semi law enforcement capacity. So I don't want anybody out there to think that, you know, we're just anti the cops and we're just, you know, we're just that's not the case at all, I'm sure. But it just, to me, this seems just very, very odd and almost, you know, again, it almost seems like they have a vested interest in terms of you know, suppressing this, covering it up. Maybe, you know, the implications are just, they're out there. There's a lot of different things that could have happened here, but it doesn't make sense to anybody. And, you know, I got to tell you, if you've got to ask the question, Carla, and I'm sure Willie Jr. have pondered this as well. If this had happened to another person, you know, if this had happened to a college, you know, a kid or, you know, fill in the blank, would the police have had the same reaction? Because, you know, we've seen some cases that that have been highlighting just nonstop attention and nonstop attention from the authorities, where, you know, people, you know, of different races and so on and so forth could wind up getting the most attention. So do you think that plays a role in it at all?
Somewhat I do, because after dealing with it and me dealing with it personally, because it took a toll on my husband, his health failed, he started getting high blood pressure. He experienced migraines for 60 days. You know, he got in therapy and everything. So I kept it going. And like I told the senator and I told one of the officers, I said, I feel like I've committed a crime.
Right.
That here it is, I have a missing loved one and no one's willing to help. But there, at the time he was missing, there was a Chinese lady missing. They aired her all over the TV for a whole 3 weeks. They wouldn't put my father-in-law on TV.
Yeah, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. We lost Tara, I believe. She was reconnecting with the show. Tara, is that you?
Yes, that's me. Yeah, that's me.
I'm sorry. We disconnected there. Do you have any thoughts on you know, some of the issues that we've been talking about here?
Oh, sure. Tara, you mean me? Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, I always have something to say. I wanted to elaborate on what you said about being supportive of law enforcement, because I think that's really important. As a social worker from Bowling Green State University in Ohio, that's where I got my advocacy training from Ohio law enforcement. So that was also where I learned from some fantastic detectives, particularly in Euclid, Ohio, about investigation and advocacy and seeing police officers treat victims of violent crime over a course of 20 years with dignity and respect. And I just wasn't seeing that, obviously, in this case, is absolutely horrifying. And I think what's key for people to realize, you know, Carla and I worked together for a long time documenting things and contacting and making paper trails. And I got to tell you, it's astounding the number of contacts. You know, like Chuck Jr. had said, we went to a ball, we went to vigils, you know, we networked across the board, and they did everything that they could possibly do, you know, in terms of what an advocate might suggest, you know, my contact suggested. And I tell you, you know, even Senator Brown encouraged the police departments in writing to work together, East Cleveland and Cleveland, and that's a United States senator.
Right.
And it still did not happen. And I don't know why. I don't know. Personally, as a human being, I don't know how anyone can treat anybody the way that this family has been treated when a loved one has gone missing. And but unfortunately, I think what they've experienced is not uncommon. And that's not uncommon for victims of crime. It's not just families of, you know, people that have people missing, unfortunately. It's the system, too.
You know, Senator Brown, I've somewhat followed his career. I'm in New Jersey, and so I'm not too far away from him. But I follow his career, and he seems like someone that would be genuinely compassionate, and seem like he seems like someone that would want to help out in the future. So, do you have any contact with him still regarding this case?
With who?
Senator Brown.
With this case, directly, no. It was the contact was made through Carla because she had initiated the letter. But I also do know that Senator Brown was also supportive to other families in the Cleveland area and Ohio that have missing loved ones. And for me, someone who is recovering from a chronic illness, he supported me and helped advocate for my son and I with illness. So I think he is a wonderful example of what someone can do for the constituents when they are in office, because everybody else around these families, this family in particular, nobody would help them.
Yeah. And this is a sitting United States senator, and, you know, I'm sure if he would leave his door open to you, Carla, I'm sure that there may be a way for you to get in contact with him again. Although, at this point, if he's already written the letter to try to get them to work together, and they haven't done it, then it's unfortunately, I don't know if there's really anything much more he could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's tough, because when you look at the dynamics of our system, a United States senator has a lot of power.
Right.
You know, and really that's a disrespect to the office, you know, disrespect across the board, you know, for human rights and dignity. And, we have an elderly man missing, and it was, you know, it's infuriating.
We have a phone call now from 216 area code. Carla and Tara, how are you fixed for time? Do we have time to take this phone call?
Yes.
All right, perfect. Okay. Willie, you're back on the line now, Willie?
Yes, I am. Well, you're on speakerphone, so we both, me and my wife, are both sitting here.
Perfect. Okay, let's take this call from 216 area code. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hey, welcome. This is Mr. D, the private investigator. How are you?
Oh, good. Thank you very much for calling.
Great. Yeah, I'm really happy that Carla and Tara and Chuck are on and getting their story out there. It makes me feel good.
Well, I got to tell you, David and I have done a little research into this, within the last week or so, but we haven't spent a lot of time. I wasn't aware of these details that we're learning about today, and I got to tell you, I have never heard of anything like this before. I mean, just, you know, the stonewalling by the police department, the lack of cooperation, the circumstances. As I mentioned earlier, it's almost, I've seen Hollywood movies that were based on less, so to speak.
Yeah, and it really is unfair to actual police departments to call the East Cleveland people police departments. They're nothing short of ridiculous. So what got me involved in the case in the very first place was the fact that I didn't believe Willie and Carla. I didn't feel that it was possible that a police department could be so absolutely without feeling. And literally within the first few days, I was absolutely stunned.
And then you've got the mayor too, making these inappropriate comments. That certainly doesn't seem like an appropriate thing to say to you. What he said to you, Carla, it almost, to me, it almost casts suspicion on himself. Just saying that it's not. an appropriate reaction to, you know, when you're talking to someone who's had a loved one missing. And it just, I guess it just further adds to the mystery surrounding this case.
Yes.
And I wonder, what is it exactly, and Tara, you may be able to answer this question. What is it exactly that we do to go forward here? Because, you know, obviously we have a police department that is not interested in working with you, and they seem to have shut the door on this case. Is it just a matter of, you know, reaching out to media outlets and other individuals that could, you know, raise awareness and create pressure on the police department to do something about this? And what's the blueprint for going forward?
Now, who was that question for?
It could be for anybody. I mean, if you all want to chime in on that, that's fine.
Well, for me, now that I'm one of the victims, we are family. Because there's quite a few of us, and the way I connect with a lot of people of the missing is on Facebook. So we are all family, whether we know each other personally or not. We are all family because we're all going through the same thing. The reason why we are putting everything on Facebook is to bring awareness, to let other people know that if you don't stick together, if you don't try to keep your sanity, you would just fall, get pushed by the wayside. We were blessed for us to meet Tara, for us to meet Mr. D, for you guys to even come into our lives. We were blessed that way. It took 7 years, close to 7 years, but we were blessed. Tara and Mr. D has been with us since virtually the beginning. It's been it's a roller coaster. I personally wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy. For my family, especially my son, which his birthday is the same day as my father's, he hates his birthday because he's so used to talking to him on that day. If no other time, he talks to him on his birthday. So he hates that day. With me, it's just, I'm more frustrated than anything. I never, again, you see stuff on TV and your heart goes out. And me just being a regular average Joe, my heart went out to the Jehesus, to Amanda Berry and family when their daughters became missing. I would just wanted to believe that everybody would feel that compassion, but that's not the case. Most of the time, if it's not happening with you, most people just push it to the side. Me personally, I can't push it to the side. This is going to be an ongoing event for me forever, until I get answers. So I'm going to keep doing and keep doing and keep doing until I get answers.
Anybody else have anything to add?
Well, I think the only thing that we really need for this case to go forward is for the East Cleveland Police Department to get out of the way. The reason why we can't have Crime Stoppers money is because East Cleveland won't ask for Crime Stoppers money. The only reason why we can't get the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation to help us is because East Cleveland won't get out of the way. If they would simply get out of the way, I believe that we could find out what happened to Mr. Sanberry relatively quickly. The answers, we all know on this line what happened to Mr. Sanberry. We know it. But we just need East Cleveland to get out of the way so we can prove it. That's the truth.
I agree totally.
Totally, yes.
With the information that we've developed over the years and with the people that we've spoken to and with the evidence that we've seen, all we need is for East Cleveland to admit that they're not going to help and just get out of the way and let us take care of it. That's all they need to do. Pretty simple. Don't do anything, which is what you've been doing all along, but just officially get out of the way.
That would help us out greatly.
Unbelievably.
Willie, you're talking about this, how other families and other people only care about it when it happens to themselves. When, you know, if it's not their relative, then they kind of put it on the back burner or whatever. And David, you can. There have been, you know, some families. Well, I don't want to say that, but in your experience, David. How has it been working with families that have missing relatives in terms of their support from other families? I mean, it seems that, you know, Willie, you mentioned you guys are all family, so, and you're going through this together, and, you know, this is an ongoing battle for all of you. But, David, has that been the case with other families that have been going through the same thing, David? I mean, have they sort of taken that approach and linked with families that are also going through the same thing and try to raise awareness for several other cases? Because we've had some people on this show, you know, Glenn Dean Grant and others. We even had Gina DeJesus' mother call in last year, and they were always the first to, you know, promote other cases and raise awareness to other cases because, you know, going through something like this is just tremendous for anybody that's missing a relative. David, you there? That wouldn't be anybody else, David.
But, well, he must have got cut off, but I'll say something to that. That's what I was meaning by the families of the missing, the majority of us, once we connect, we become a family. And whenever we see or hear of somebody else missing, we push the issue. We press the issue to get it out to the media one way or the other, whether it's through a rally, whether it's through Facebook, Twitter, whatever. We do whatever we can to try to help one another. That's what I meant by us being a family. The ones who are not victims, they don't normally come out to it like us, the persons that are the victims. That's the better way I can say it. Us that are the victims, we understand what each one of us is going through. A lot of people don't understand what entails when having a missing loved one. A lot of people just don't understand. So again, it was a blessing that I was on Facebook and was talking to Miss White, and she in turn got me connected with David, which in turn got me connected to you. And I just see, when I see stuff on Facebook about the missing, that's what my whole page is all about. I'm sharing everything that I see with missing people. I'm sharing constantly. That's what I do daily, since I'm physically unable to go to work right now. So I do that basically all day long, all day until I go to sleep. I'm on my Facebook page, steady, constantly sharing other family missing people's. You know, I'm just trying to do what I can do my part. Because I understand we don't have a support group like, say, Narcotics Anonymous or the AAA. We don't have a support group like that. Well, I guess amongst ourselves, we try to create our own support group.
What about John Walsh? Has anybody been in contact with John Walsh? Has he done any reporting on this case?
You tell him that one.
Well, we contacted John Walsh, and from what we were told was, you send the information in, and they choose who they want to profile.
I mean, a lot has to do with the fact that it has to be submitted by a police department.
Yeah.
For it to be on there, and you know that just wasn't going to happen. And we tried to explain that to pretty much 48 Hours, Dateline, America's Most Wanted, when they were on television, and a couple of the other places, that, you know, Mr. Stanberry's case didn't involve sex or or steroids or a lot of money or cocaine, and it wasn't a sexy missing persons case. And that's a direct quote. And since we don't really have the support of any law enforcement agency at all, you know, those type of resources are just not open to the Stanberry family, unfortunately, which is a surprise to me, that I thought that anybody with a missing person can access these type of things. But, you know, it's all pretty much controlled by what the police want to do.
Mr. D, have you actually looked into anyone in the East Cleveland Police Department? And have you, you know, kind of had any information as to, you know, maybe any impropriety there regarding this investigation?
This particular investigation, no. But I mean, the East Cleveland Police Department is pretty notorious in the Northern Ohio area. I mean, the chief was. Well, the chief that they were talking about was let go for some improprieties with drug transactions that were handled by her department. They have problems every couple of years where they lose chiefs and they lose patrol officers for one thing or the other. It isn't beyond the realm of possibility, but at the same time, you know, I don't know what would be worse, them doing something or them what they're doing now, which is absolutely nothing. So, I mean, I don't know. They couldn't do any better job messing it up on purpose than just not doing it. Which is what they seem to be very good at.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't know if we may have even touched this, but is there any agency within the government that you could file a complaint with? Is there any, you know, recourse that you could do to try to get them to you know, do a better job or at least, as you say, officially acknowledge that they're not going to help and get out of the way?
Well, surprisingly, police don't have to investigate anything. I mean, they basically can or cannot investigate crimes. That's up to them. An injunction or a request, you know, what attorney would help the Stanberry family? I mean, it might take years in which to force the Cleveland or the East Cleveland Police Department to do anything. And I, at this point, I don't know if you know, I'm not speaking for the family, but I don't know if I want them to do anything but get out of the way. I don't really have any confidence in their ability to investigate it. So forcing them to investigate it might not be the best thing for us to do. I mean, that's obviously a decision that the family would make, and I would support their decision. But at the same time, them getting involved now would really just frighten me. I don't want them anywhere near it. I want them to get out of it and just let professional law enforcement people handle it.
Hey, man,
they're willing to help, but they won't help unless the East Cleveland Police Department requests them in. They can request them in and step back, and we could have, you know, agents of the Attorney General who have spoken to me directly and to the family directly. Listen, we will help you, but they have to call us in, and that's where the trouble starts.
Me personally, I hope that they just continue to do what they do and that stay out the way.
Yeah.
Now, we've been talking a great deal about the investigation, and we talked a little bit about Willie Sr., but I kind of want to, you know, get some of your thoughts on who he was as a person, because, you know, I think it's important for us to remember, you know, just how these people are, and just remember, you know, what they are, because, you know, when you're going through a difficult time like this, sometimes I would guess, like, I know with the loss of my parents, if I remember certain things about them and remember who they were, it helps me to get through some of the more difficult times. So, you know, Willie, we could start with you. What do you want the audience to know about your father?
My father was a good man. He will reach out and help you in any possible way he can. I have a story about him. When I was a little kid, he played with a gospel group called the Cleveland All-Stars. They called him up on stage one night, and I ran up on stage with him. And I really expected him to tell me to sit down, but instead he pulled me next to him and let me stay up there with him. And that's what gave me the idea or the gumption to want to become a musician.
was because I got my first taste of being able to see what it was like in front of an audience through him. Not only did he do me like that, he did my son like that. He did my nephew like that. He did my brother like that. I mean, he was just a good guy. There's so many things that I can say about him, and we really don't have enough time that I could just go on and on and on and on, but I'm going to just say he was a good guy. He did whatever he had to do to take care of his family. And what gave me, that instilled in me the ideal of family first. You take care of your family. You go out, you work, you take care of your family. You do what you have to do to make sure that your family is taken care of. And I got that from him. I got one to be, again, a musician through him. The last time we used to talk about us playing, and I told him, I said, Pop, I done played everywhere in the country. He said, but there's one place you haven't played that I played. And I said, what's that? He played at the Apollo. I never had a chance to play at the Apollo, but he did. And that's the thing he always kept over me. You never got to play at the Apollo, but I did. And that's what I kind of remember. I keep them good thoughts like that in my mind to keep me going. It's frustrating, but I look back over my life and I think about all the good things and the things, the talks we had, and he didn't ever leave me wrong. He always steered me in the right direction, so I'm always love him. And until I find answers, I'll never stop. I'll never stop looking. I'll continue to look. And
what about you, Carla?
Personally, with me not having my father in the house, and I met him when I was 16, that was like my father. I could call him about anything. He was there if you called him, no matter what time it was. He never showed nothing but love. He loved all his grandkids. There is a big family. Like I said, it was 17 of them. I think 5 died. It was 12. Since he's been missing, he has lost a brother. He's lost a sister. He's lost a niece. And the brother and sister had cancer, and they just gave up because they didn't know what happened to their brother. And they couldn't take it. But he always, if you were in a building and you were looking down and sad, he would always walk in and say, you have something to smile about. You're beautiful. He would, you know, he was a ladies man. I mean, even if he walked into the gas station and if a young lady that was a cashier looked it down, he'll be like, wait a minute, baby. You're too cute to, you know, have a frown on your face. You need to smile. You know, if the men didn't remember him, the women remembered him. If nobody else did. And he was just that charming gentleman to even when he was missing, and the chief of police took us through City Hall, everybody knew him and had a story to tell.
Yeah.
But they still didn't help us. Even though everybody knew him and had a story to tell, they still didn't help us.
And it was an incident where one of his tenants called in and said, well, I last saw him at the gas station, and the police department stated, how do you know it was him? How do you know that's what he had on? You could have been watching the news. And she was upset about that. They took it as a joke.
They took my father's whole case as a joke. My father's case was a joke to East Cleveland from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a joke from the very beginning. I kept my sanity again through my grandchildren, my wife. Tara was tremendous in helping me get through some of the very rough times. Mr. D came along and that was like my guardian angel. He helped me through some difficult times, and he can attest to when we talk about my father, the emotions that I show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's real.
Yep.
And it's just that we're trying to find answers because his older brother is 82, and it's basically like we were in Cleveland last weekend, and it's basically like he's just giving up. He's ready to die. You know, not knowing where their brother is, but they're older, and I didn't expect them to get out and try to find him because they're in their 80s and 70s.
And my thing was, he was my father. So, of course, I'm going to get out and do any and everything I can to get information. Like I said, I went through the areas of the lowest parts of the city where all you seen was drug dealers and drug addicts and abandoned cars, burnt up cars and everything. I was stopping police on in the middle of the street asking questions to where to find these places. Everything that I've done has been genuine. I have nothing to gain out of this other than getting my father back. That's all I want.
Are you confident that you're going to be able to get the answers that you want?
Now, the thing with that is, I was telling Carla, and I also told Tara, I was happy, sad when Gina Nell was found. The thing that I stated after the fact was the one thing they had on their side that my father didn't have on his side was youth. At the time my father became missing, he was 73. He'll be 80 in October. So he had way more time behind him than he had in front of him. And I'm just hoping that I can find anything. I would be happy with a shoe.
Now, is there, I kind of wanted to close it up here. Is there any website, I guess, that people can go to find out more information and people can, on Facebook and wherever, can share information about this case through social media?
I did set him up a missing person page on Facebook. I pretty much have went on all the other missing people's social networks and put his information on there. There's one on MySpace. Gina De Jesus has been a great inspiration where they have his information on there. The Jason Project, they have the information on there. Pretty much all the missing social networks have his information.
Black and Missing.
Even the Native American with Tara. I try to keep him on Facebook because there's more people on Facebook. It's a lot of young people. It's a lot of family members. And Facebook seems to be the one that people talk about more. I've even went putting them on Twitter. I'll post stuff on there. But pretty much I think I've have him all over the internet.
Yeah, Willie and I and David are friends on Facebook. And so, you know, we'll be trying to share any posts about this case. And David and I are working on expanding our reach, getting people to help out and to post information regarding these cases. Tara, I kind of want to throw it back to you. Do you have any closing thoughts?
I just think it's really good to never give up hope. Obviously, you know, when we do see people come back home alive, it is great inspiration to those families who still don't have the answers. And I think it's really important for people who don't have a loved one missing to try and understand how painful it is. And it really trickles down, you know, into the community when people go missing. And when you don't have a positive law enforcement response, it just is even, you know, there's another re-victimization there from a whole different thing that causes damage. So, hopefully we can continue to move forward and get
get his case out there, and hopefully we can. It would be nice to see East Cleveland get out of the way and put it in.
Do you have any website for the work that you do?
You can go to Amina's Law on Facebook. It's capital letters AMINA. And there's updated information that we have about some upcoming legislation and the other cases, too. We just keep generating about what's going on. You know, like Carla said, on Facebook, it's really a great network for the missing and the families.
Absolutely. And Mr. Dean, do you have any closing thoughts?
Yeah, just two real quickly. I just want the listeners to understand that When the East Cleveland Police Department actually did acknowledge that there was a police report on a missing person, people need to realize that the entire report, the entire information on that report would sit on one Twitter post. One. That's all the information that's ever been generated by the East Cleveland Police Department. One Twitter post, which is staggering. It's absolutely staggering. It's been 7 years. That's all they have. I had more information than that in a day. But irregardless, I also want people to know you'll never meet the Stanberry family from all over the country. You might not like the Stanberry family, you might like me, whatever. If somebody you love disappeared and nobody cared, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
Where would you go? There's nothing. There's nothing out there. It's a sea of scam artists, shysters. There's great people, but you have to weed through all of them to get to what you need to help get your loved one home. If nobody cares, you're in a world of hurt. So.
Do you have any websites or anything that you want to direct people to?
Well, if they have any questions, specific questions, if they don't believe how bad this has been, just send me an email, and I'll be more than happy to show you what we got. It's Pete, P-E-T-E, at investigateohio.com. Feel free to ask me the questions. Feel free to doubt me. You know, that's where I was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when I first came on board with this. And I'll be more than happy to give you what I have, and you can make up your own minds.
Well, listen, I really want to thank each and every one of you. And really, what really comes through here tonight is your level of passion. And your level of determination to try to find out the answers that you desire. And I think it's absolutely great that you guys are all working together and helping each other out. And I just want to let you know, and I know I could speak on behalf of David, whose phone keeps on going in and out, that I'll be happy, we'll be happy to have you on the show anytime you want to. You know, we've been going almost for an hour and a half now, and I feel that we can go for another 2 or 3 hours just because of the fascinating nature of this case and just all of the improprieties and all of the different things that you have experienced and the East Cleveland Police Department. And Todd, I think you brought up a good point about how the police conduct victimizes the families again, and that's something I was alluding to earlier. You know how Willie Senior, his brother, is having health problems, and you know, I'm sure that they're related to this case. And I know that it's got to be stressful to everybody involved. And if anything that we could do to help, we'd be happy to have each and every one of you on the show. Whenever you guys want to discuss this and anything else going forward, so that's kind of our pledge to you out there, that you can consider this your show. This is it's your show as well. So I just want to thank you and hopefully we can work together, all of us. I'm on Facebook, so each and every, you know, Willie, I know you and I are friends on Facebook, but I'd recommend anybody that wishes to become my friend on Facebook, and you can become David's friend as well, and we'll be happy to work together going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much.
I just like to say one thing, if anybody can hear me.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. Well, I'd like to just stress, I mean, because like Mr. D said, there was only one Twitter post. And that's the thing, I mean, because Twitter is starting to become very popular. And like I say, we'll start sharing this case on Twitter all the time because I have my Facebook account hooked right up with Twitter. So whatever I post on Facebook goes right on Twitter, too, and vice versa. So what we're going to be doing, and I just wanted to mention also, please do, we are having a prayer vigil right now for another person that we are working with, Christina Kleckner. And Heather is the one that that's taken on that case, and she's the one that actually introduced me to this case, too, because she knows you, Carla, and Willie pretty well. And what I wanted to say is for people is to actually go to my Facebook page, The Missing and Abducted. All the cases are on there. You could also visit Willie's Facebook page, and that is Missing Willie Stanberry Senior. And you can actually go right onto the Missing and Abducted, and you can get it that way. And just keep sharing. Share on Facebook. Connect your Facebook with your Twitter. Because the more that we can get this on the Twitter and around all the other social networks, and like the private detective said, that the Cleveland Police Department needs to move out of the way and let us do our job.
Amen.
Yes. Well, thank you all. I want to put a big shout out. I'm sorry, Bob. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, that's okay.
I just want to give a big shout out to Heather White, who is really a wonderful advocate and has been helping out these families. Is also helping out Christina Atkins. And you can add me as a friend on Facebook. I'm right on Bob's friends list, so you can go to Bob Carson. It's Carson's Karma 15, is it, Bob?
It's the personal Facebook page. My personal Facebook page is facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA.
Oh, MMA, I'm sorry. Yeah, and you can connect with me there. And I have a question for the private investigator.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You mentioned I didn't catch your email address. If you could send me your email address.
Sure.
So that way we can at least keep in contact and what's going on with the case and whatnot and any updates, because that's what we do on our show is we do any updates on cases like this.
Not a problem.
Okay. All right. And Tara, she's a friend on my list, so I'm friends with her, so you can. That's a good way to connect with me, too.
Yeah.
And thank you, Tara, for calling in. Thank you, Willie and Carla, for coming on and willing to get this case out here. Because we need to get this out, and we need to get Willie found one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
And I just say thank you for all your help.
Yeah. And everybody, you can listen to that PSA. And if you want to download that PSA, there is all kinds of audio capturing software that you can get for free on the Internet to download and actually share that. On all social networks, and even to have it, you know, I mean, you can even listen to it on your cell phone and even share it that way. There was a mobile app with VoiceBo that you can actually download for your cell phone and for smartphones, and you can actually play this and you can share this with all your other friends.
Okay.
Cell phone. So.
Right.
Yeah, I just found that out from Justin, the one that did the PSA for you, that helped me with it. He told me that there is a mobile app that you can download for the phone, and you can share it that way, too.
Okay, I'll look into my Play Store. That way I can download it on my phone.
Yeah, exactly. It's right in the Google Play Store. You can get it right there.
Okay.
Yeah, right, so.
Absolutely. Well, guys, again, thank
you very
much for coming on the show. And anytime, you guys
are welcome back on the show.
Let's all keep in contact. And let's you know, continue to
fight
moving forward.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Willie.
Take
care.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, Carla. Bye, Carla.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, David, you still online?
I don't know if people there in the chat room are listening to the show, if they can hear it, but your voice sounds like you're in a tunnel, so I'm kind of having a hard time hearing you and some of the things that you do say. I don't know if anybody else.
I hope that that's just your phone, because so far, I have to go back and listen to the show to turn out, but I don't have any fan blowing. The connection should be okay, but I'll have to go back. I don't think it's my connection. I certainly hope not, but in any event, we just had, this was absolutely great. It's very, very gut-wrenching hearing Willie talk about his father and some of the details concerning his case. I alluded to this on air that I wasn't aware of just how bad the police investigation has been, and just all of the other improprieties that we heard about, the lack of a police report. The mayor telling Carl that he may be on the bottom of a river. The Senator Brown, Sherrod Brown, writing and trying to implore lawmakers or the law enforcement officials to work together with the federal officials. And all of this goes ignored. And nothing happens. And I'm just like, this is, what's the deal here? What's going on here?
Yeah. Okay, I don't know. Looks like we have 30 minutes left. Did you want to, I wanted to also pick up on Gillen Red Wine. And back several months ago, he went on Dr. Phil. And, and he debunked the lie detector test, and I'd like to go ahead and play that. That's like a 39 minutes. So if we do go over the scheduled time, it'll still be recorded, so you can always go back and listen to the end of the show. And I did share all of those videos on your of the show of Dr. Phil, and all the information is on his website on how to actually, if you have any information or tips or whatnot, you can go right to their website, and there's a place there to who you can contact to give those tips to.
Okay, so we're going to play the Dylan Redwine, his father, on Dr. Phil?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let me pull it up here. And, let's play it. This is going to take us at past 10 o'clock, and from that point on, the show is going to end. So you'll be able to hear the show on the archive at blogtalkradio.com/CarsonSquare. There is somebody else in the chat room saying that there is some audio problems. I hope that, I don't know what the problem is. I have to investigate and see how it turns out. But in any event, here is Dylan Redwine's father on Dr. Phil. We started to play this clip a few weeks ago on our other show, but we're going to play it again in its entirety here on Carson's Corner. So here it is.
Today on an all-new Dr. Phil.
Where is your boy?
I have no idea. I wish I knew, but I don't know.
His son is missing, and his family suspects him.
I do believe that Mark took Dylan to punish my mom.
I don't like you. I hate you. You have been nothing of a father.
His ex-wife.
He has a violent temper, and he snaps easily.
I'm not a violent person.
A former girlfriend defends him.
I do not believe Mark would harm Dylan in any way. How dare you point the fingers at somebody when you have no proof?
Lady, you don't have the right to speak to a mother with a missing child with that kind of judgment.
He's the only one who's not looking for Dylan, because he knows where he is.
I've done everything that I know how to do to be involved in every aspect of what's going on to find him.
Then,
answer my question. What the hell is going on here?
The story continues backstage.
If you've got information about where that boy is, you need to tell us.
This is his chance.
I'm on my way to polygraph exam.
To silence his family's suspicions.
Are we going to do this?
Let's do it.
The polygraph drama.
Yesterday, we were on the edge of our seats trying to get answers as to what happened to little Dylan Redwine. His parents were pointing the fingers at each other over their son's disappearance. Here's what happened.
The search for 13-year-old Dylan Redwine has gone national.
His father told police that he left to run errands at 7:30 that morning, but found Dylan was gone when he came back home just 4 hours later.
Police do not think that Dylan simply ran away.
We're waiting to get the call that to go pick up my baby brother. I want everybody to know how much I love that boy.
When I found out Dylan was missing, my first gut reaction was, Mark.
Elaine and I are very bitter and angry towards each other.
It's been a horrible divorce. To Mark, everything is a game, and you either win or lose, and Mark is not good at losing. Dylan was on his watch, and now Dylan's gone. He acts like, oh, well, I lost him. He's done everything other than look for Dylan. I have more concern over my lost dog than he has over his lost child.
People want to say that I'm behind it. I absolutely had nothing to do with Dylan's disappearance.
Since Dylan went missing, Mark and I have not spoken at all.
If my son was missing, no matter how much I despised my ex, I would have a conversation with that person. He goes missing and y'all trade text messages?
She never called me.
Why do I have to call you when you lost our son? That doesn't make sense.
Did you have, like, really pressing business, I mean, that you left that morning? Because you hadn't seen your son for a long time. So you get back at 11:30 and he's gone.
Right.
And so you just lay down and take a nap?
Well, no. I didn't find it odd that he wasn't sitting there waiting.
Saw Dylan the afternoon he went missing.
On the day Dylan went missing, I saw two boys walking down the road not too far from where Dylan lived. I really don't think Mark was the last person to see Dylan that day.
What do you think happened to your son?
I've had suspicions that Elaine could be involved in this.
Do you honestly believe that this woman is involved in the disappearance of your son?
I believe that it's possible. Yes.
When do you sit back and say, I lost Dylan?
I didn't lose Dylan.
Then why is he gone?
That's a question we all have to ask, but nobody's
got
the answer.
No, you have to ask that question. You had him. Where is he? Hopefully Mark will buck up. I mean, for the first time, be a father. Your son needs you. You know, help him. Stop acting like you're so innocent and have nothing to do with this. I want to believe that he's still alive. I do.
Did you take a polygraph?
They did.
And what were the results?
There's been some conflict as to what the actual results are.
I have the best polygraph operators in the world, and I will make those people available to you to clear your name. Will you take a polygraph?
I will take a polygraph.
Because I will make that available to you. You can take it, you know, while you're here.
I'm certainly no expert in polygraphs, but, you know, my focus all along has always been about finding Dylan and bringing him home.
Corey is Mark's son from his second wife, Elaine. He refuses to call his father Dad and feels Mark has his younger brother, Dylan, hidden somewhere. Take a look at this.
Mark is a very selfish and arrogant man. I do believe that Mark took Dylan to punish my mom and essentially hurt her. There has been two previous times where Mark has kidnapped me and Dylan. He took us to a ghetto hotel in Denver, and in 2006 he took us to his boss's house. Both those times I did feel like I was being kidnapped. I believe that Mark is paying someone to keep Dylan hidden. I think Mark has been lying from the start. I organized an event on Facebook to rally at Mark's house about Dylan's disappearance. And we had picket signs, you know, hope for Dylan signs. Mark, come out, take some involvement with your son being missing.
There was people with pitchforks and guns wanting to come up here and rip my fingernails out until they got the answers to the questions that they wanted. Corey was the initiator. I believe that Elaine is fueling Corey's anger towards me.
I can never have a relationship with Mark. After this, Mark is gone from my life forever.
Corey, thanks for joining us. I know that you want to find your little brother.
Yes, more than anything.
What do you think's going on here?
I think Mark has something to do with it. I think he's either got him heading out or, you know, done something and disposed. I strongly think that he's involved.
Why?
He hasn't done a single thing since Dylan has been gone.
Why do you say that? What has he not done?
He hasn't been to any of the benefits. He wasn't there for Dylan's birthday vigil. He hasn't helped at all with the Find Missing Dylan Red Wine Fund.
And that's offensive to you?
Very. Very.
Dr. Phil, I'd like to make a comment about the fundraiser thing. I have several people in the community in which I live that are reaching out to me on a daily basis and volunteering their time to have some involvement with a fundraiser. But somebody from this side of the room called her and told her that they didn't want her to have any involvement in anything that had anything to do with raising money and didn't want me involved in any of that.
You're wrong, and you know you're wrong. If you want to raise money for Dylan's fund and for the reward, then do it. Why does it have to be everybody else's responsibility?
It's not everybody else's responsibility.
Why can't you go do something on your own? Why do you got to have our approval?
You say he has clear motivation. What do you mean?
Dylan didn't really look up to Mark. They had a relationship, but it was never what Dylan had wanted. It was always what Mark had wanted, which was always to be on the road.
Really?
Never there.
Why do you call your father Mark instead of dad or
because he's not a father to me. A father is someone who cares for their kids and, you know, would do anything for them. Be a role model. Someone to
look up
to.
You're being very disrespectful, and I believe that everything that's coming out of your mouth is perpetuated by your
mother. I have my own mouth. I can say my own words.
Then use it.
I am at you. I don't like you. I hate you. And you have been nothing of a father since the last 10 years. And Dylan's birthday, even though he's not here to celebrate it with us, where were you? You sure?
I was making every effort I possibly could because I was in Texas working for the company that I work for, trying to get into Bayfield.
And you're the only one
night.
Working. I'm not working and doing that stuff, too. I went, got off work and went straight to the park and had a candlelight.
Let's stay on point here. Mark's ex-girlfriend, Karen, called our producers to voice the other side of this because she says these people are being unfair to Mark, and in fact, that he had an excellent relationship with Dylan. Take a look.
I dated Mark for about 6 months. I spent time with him and Dylan, and I don't see him in any kind of light other than a good dad. I do not believe Mark would harm Dylan in any way. He loved Dylan. I do not believe Mark is involved at all in the disappearance of Dylan. I believe Mark hasn't got a fair shake in the media. I'm a straight shooter and I'll tell it like it is. And what I would say to Elaine is, how dare you point the fingers at somebody when you have no proof?
So you're not in a relationship with him now?
No.
But you were in the past and you've observed him with Dylan?
Yes, I did.
And you say they had a good relationship?
Yes, I traveled to Mark's home, spent a week with him and Dylan. And everything that he said is exactly what happened. Dylan slept on the couch. He would never get up. You know, he would walk around. He'd get up in the morning, Mark would, and smoke a cigarette and have a cup of coffee. And he'd be like, Dylan, Dilly boy, let's go. Get up, get up. And we'd do this for like hour and a half, 2 hours. Mm-hmm. He just wouldn't get up. Mm-hmm. And the same thing is like his work. He would have to go into town to do his payroll. Or drop off papers because he travels. So that's why he's not home to be with his kids. I mean, he travels, he works out of town. When he comes home, he would get Dylan. But I don't believe for a minute he killed his kid or...
Okay, and I understand that, and I appreciate you weighing in with some independent observations.
Right.
The one thing I have a problem with is one statement you made, which is to look at her and say, how dare you?
Right.
Because, lady, you don't have the right to speak to a mother with a missing child with that kind of judgment, and you don't know what she's going through
correct.
Right now.
I get you that.
Don't put yourself in her shoes.
You don't
have the right to say that.
That's fine.
You're out of
that.
Your lane when you go telling her, how dare you make that comment. I'm just saying.
I really think what's sad is they need to be united and work together to find Dylan. I feel bad for this. I really do.
So does Mark's, we got to take a break. Does Mark's past behavior give law enforcement the right to question him in the case of his missing son? Another ex-wife seems to think so. Well, we'll be right back. If one of our two boys went missing, There is absolutely nothing that we wouldn't do. You seem smug, combative, just aren't engaged. What the hell is going on here?
I was married to Mark from 1984 to 1990. Mark was not a good husband, and he was not a nice guy. I remember one time he threw me down on the ground and started punching me in the face. Mark threatened to take the kids from me several times. There were police reports that had to be filed before he would return them. There was an incident in 1990 when Mark did not return the children and I had to report it to the police department. I was petrified. I was deathly afraid that Mark was going to hide the kids, that he was going to take them and I would never see them again. I believe that Mark could do something to harm Dylan because he has a violent temper and he snaps easily.
Betsy, you've been watching everything that has transpired here, everything that's been talked about. What do you want to add to this conversation?
I would just like to have or to hear Mark say what happened. There are so many questions, and the stories keep changing, and that's why people are looking at you.
The story's not changing.
No, really?
What are you hearing
your,
change,
your
Betsy?
Your story has changed.
No.
Because you went to Tristan's house and talked to him, and he didn't see Dylan. Your next story was that you went to Tristan's house and nobody was there. So how could you talk to somebody that isn't there?
To respond to that, if I may, I attempted to go to Tristan's house and talk to him, but he didn't answer the door. I assumed that possibly him and Dylan were at the lake. You know, the fishing pole has never been found. I assumed that maybe that was a possibility. Do I know for a fact that he had a fishing pole? Absolutely not.
When you go into your house, the fishing pole is in the garage. You didn't walk through the garage and into the house
there's
before you went into the house.
There's several places that fishing pole is.
It was always
it was either
in the
next
garage.
To the TV.
And how come that's the first you noticed that before?
Well, you sure know a lot. You sure, you...
I've investigated in my mind since it's happened.
Well, boy, then why do we have legal or law enforcement involved when we got you two on?
Because they have to deal with people like you who won't tell them the answers, who won't cooperate.
Well, Betsy's son, Brandon, says he refuses to side with his father, Mark, or Elaine.
Mark is my biological father. Growing up, I feel my mother had a lot of hatred and disdain for Mark. After the age of 5, there was no real relationship at all. The only reason I reached out to Mark again was because Dylan was missing. In the beginning, Mark was not at all helpful in the search to find Dylan. It was very frustrating. Mark had asked me what I would do if my son was missing, and I replied to him, I would be on rooftops screaming. I'd be knocking doors down, trying to get anybody to talk. My mom has told me when I was a child, there were a couple incidents when Mark didn't return us. He was hiding us, so we couldn't go home at that time. It raises a lot of red flags. It crossed my mind that Mark is hiding Dylan or has harmed him. All I can say is I hope he's safe.
Brandon, we interviewed you and recorded that tape before today. Does anything here that's happened today change your opinion, inform you in any way?
Absolutely not. There's questions, and I think a lot of the focus is on Mark because there hasn't been a lot done to take that focus off. And until that happens, it's always going to have to be on Mark. It's logical to look at the last person to see him.
You know, I said when we first started this, Mark, I said, I've been doing this for 35 years. I'm also a father of two boys.
Correct.
And I can only, you know, Robin and I talked about this, and if one of our two boys went missing, there is absolutely nothing, zip, zero, nada, nothing that we wouldn't do, no question we wouldn't answer, no person we wouldn't talk to, no activity that we would not participate in toward finding that child.
And I feel
and
like...
you seem diametrically opposite from that. You seem smug, you seem cavalier, you seem unplugged, You seem combative. You just seem like you just aren't engaged, which makes me think either A, you don't care, or B, you already have the answer. Answer my question. What the hell is going on here?
I guess I feel like from day one I've been attacked in this, and it's very hard for me.
It isn't about your ego.
I understand that.
Where is your boy?
But I've been out there, and I've done everything that I know how to do to be involved in every aspect of what's going on to find him and bring him. And where is he? I have no idea. I wish I knew, but I don't know. I just want the people in this country to keep their eyes open a little bit wider, and if they see anything suspicious, that people notify the proper authorities to help us find our son.
And you have said, you have made a commitment in this public forum, you will sit with a top-level polygraph operator and take a polygraph. You will sit down and take another polygraph exam.
I will sit with a polygraph operator. You know, I've been told by the FBI that their people are the best, and I'm hearing from you that you have people that are the best.
I will bring you Jack Tremarco. He is the best of the best. He trains the FBI polygraph operators.
Okay, well,
this is the top guy.
Obviously, I'm not a professional in that, but I've never not been willing to cooperate.
But you will do that. I will get him here, and he will do that. This is a professional that will sit down and do this with you away from all of this, and it takes an extended amount of time.
I understand that.
If you have your son stashed somewhere, or if you flew into a rage and you hurt him accidentally and he's dead, I will help you deal with it now, and we will go recover that young man. Look, I just can't turn loose of this because I can't turn loose of this little boy. So I have decided to talk to Mark backstage one-on-one because I want to give him one last chance to tell me anything and everything he knows. And when I say one last chance, there's a shelf life on the offer I'm getting ready to make him, but I'm going to give him an opportunity to tell me whatever he knows about this. So here we go. Hey, I want to touch on a couple of things with you now that this is done. While we were talking, my staff did make arrangements for this polygraph. It's something you absolutely should do. If you got nothing to do with this, it will clear you.
And you know, I've never not been willing to do that. And, you know, I don't think the polygraph is going to eliminate any of us.
But listen, here's what I want to say to you. I don't know what happened here. If you have your son stashed somewhere, or if, God forbid, you flew into a rage and you hurt him accidentally and he's dead, if something has happened, I will help you deal with it now, and we will go recover that young man, because if you are involved, it's just a matter of time. I'm telling you now, I'll help you with it today, but my offer has a shelf life.
I understand.
It's right now.
I'm not afraid of the truth.
Just know I made you the offer. If you'd got him somewhere, you know, you just have a violation of custody order. It's something we can deal with. If it's worse than that, we do what we have to do. But I'm telling you, you won't get away with this if you're involved. Let me help you.
I'm not trying to get away with anything. I'm not involved in this. No matter how it comes across, whether it be to you or anybody else, I'm not involved in this. And I have a hard time dealing with this. I struggle with this every day. And for months now, I got Corey and Elaine pointing their finger at me. Do you have any idea how I feel? Having Corey stand up there and tell me he hates me.
It's got to hurt.
It does.
But listen, if you're not involved in this, then there's something
seriously wrong with you, because your reaction to this, something's wrong.
I just feel like I'm being attacked, and I feel like...
But you weren't attacked by me when you got here.
No, you weren't attacked by me, but...
You heard me say before you came out there, I said, I am not a hitman for you against your husband.
I understand, and I agree with that.
I ask you respectful questions. I let you answer, and I treated you with dignity and respect and gave you every chance to answer the questions. So you weren't attacked by me.
I'm not a violent person. Anybody that knows me will tell you the same thing.
I hope you're telling me the truth.
I have nothing to hide, and I'm not afraid of the truth. I'm not afraid of the truth.
I hope this comes to a good end, and I hope that Dylan is somewhere safe and...
What we're all hoping for.
And comes to a...
You can't deny the reality exists, especially 3 months after this has started, that the outcome could not be favorable.
Yeah.
But as parents, I think we owe it to ourselves, because we hear people that beat the odds every day.
If you're innocent in this deal, Jack Tremarco is your best friend. This polygraph expert, he is your best friend if you're telling the truth. And if you're not, he is your worst enemy. Okay.
All right, thank you, sir.
Take care, man.
I appreciate your time.
All right.
Well, I'm here at the Dr. Phil offices, and I'm going to take the test. I'm not saying that I'm necessarily ready to take the test. I feel like I'm being pushed off the edge of the cliff.
Well, what are we going to do?
Well, Mark did agree to take a polygraph, so I'm sending him straight to the offices of Jack Tremarco, and I've told him, if you're telling the truth, he's your best friend. If you're not, well, he's not.
I'm on my way to go meet with a polygraph examiner. I agree the test can be taken, but what I'm not agreeing to is that I have to be whisked off and forced into doing it right this minute. I'll be honest with you, I'm frustrated right now. I just sat on the stage for 2 hours in front of my ex-wife, who had no questions to ask me, but continued to point her finger at me, and the only thing that she could say to me is, where's Dylan, where's Dylan, where's Dylan? I feel like my blood pressure's boiling through the roof.
Jack Tremarco?
Jack, pleasure.
Welcome. Are we going to do this?
Well, that's my whole point of being here and talking to you now, okay? Is addressing my concerns and the things that are bothering me and have been for a long time.
Well, as I said, it's got to be voluntary or we don't do it.
It's hard for me to digest all this. This is all happening way too quickly. I just feel so overwhelmed.
Would you be more comfortable with me coming out to the studio tomorrow morning after a good night's sleep?
I'll be honest with you. I feel like my blood is boiling and has been for hours. But my point is, I'm not refusing to take a polygraph test. All I'm asking for is, you know, some time to process this whole thing. Because, I mean, this has all got blindsided.
After talking with Jack, I felt more comfortable taking the test tomorrow instead of doing it today.
So yesterday, Mark was agitated and needed time to rest and process things. He said he wasn't opposed to taking the test. He just didn't want to feel pressured. I want him to be totally comfortable. This is about getting real answers. So I, despite waiting, I invited Mark to come here to Paramount to meet Jack Tremarco for an 8 a.m. polygraph test.
It's my understanding that Mark's here now. I'm set up. I'm just about ready for him. So if he's going to take this test, we'll just get it done.
Well, I'm here at the Dr. Phil offices, and I'm going to take the test. I'm not saying that I'm necessarily ready to take the test, but, you know, at this point, you know, we're going to take it. We're going to do what we got to do.
Where are you? You've had a lot of time to think since we last met.
The bottom line is I'm trying to be forthright with everybody. It's very intimidating to have my ex-wife sitting on a stage with me pointing fingers at me. I mean, that bothers me. And then to have my son come out and say, I hate you, you know, just... I feel like I'm being pushed off the edge of the cliff.
Well, what are we going to do?
I don't
I didn't come here to waste anybody's time, so. Let's do it.
I'll ask the camera to give us some privacy, and we should be done in about an hour and a half.
A question was asked, and I gave an honest answer to it. The question was, do you feel well enough to take this test? And my response to that question was no. It became clear that by answering no to that question, that there was no point in proceeding any further.
Mark decided that he didn't feel well enough to take the polygraph test. He told me he had about 3 hours of sleep last night, and he had a half bottle of Jim Beam on top of things. So he doesn't feel well enough to take the test.
What's your reaction to what you're seeing here?
I'm not surprised at all. It's typical Mark. He gets to that point where people are pushing him and pushing him to do something, to take an affirmative step, and he bails. And he's been like that the whole time. He's made promises that he never keeps.
Corey, what's your reaction to this?
You get to a certain point, and you think you're finally going to get somewhere, and he shuts down.
Do you believe that he has something to do with the disappearance of your son?
Absolutely. I always have, from day one.
Do you believe that he has harmed him?
I believe he could. I mean, I hope. I have to hope, but I believe there's a strong possibility.
You know, it's been 3 months. I mean, has your mind gone?
Thank you.
To the place that he may have killed your son?
Yes, it has.
It pains me to ask a mother that.
Pains me to answer. I just really hope that he would have better sense, but he's shown that he doesn't.
This is Jack Tramarco. This is Corey and Lane. Yesterday he said that he was upset with you. He was upset with Corey. He was upset with everyone but me. He said, quote, the show was just a soapbox for Elaine and Corey to attack me. I can't believe that Dr. Phil let Corey disrespect me. I'll never forgive Corey for saying that he hated me. Everyone keeps saying that I was the last one to see Dylan, but that just isn't true. How come no one spoke to the mail woman? She knows the area better than anyone else, and she saw Dylan. He said, quote, I still feel like I am the only one working to try and find Dylan.
I don't even know what to say, because he's the only one who's not looking for Dylan, because he knows where he is.
So you met with Mark. Describe his mindset when he got there.
Well, he was agitated because he said that this was kind of thrust upon him. He didn't expect to be doing this. And he needed time to think it all out. He didn't want to take it. He didn't trust the process. I was, quite frankly, getting fatigued. I would ask a question, and he would give me the answer to something else. And until finally, I just had to say, look, are we doing this or not?
So he said he didn't believe in the test, doesn't trust anybody. He showed up at 8 o'clock this morning, and you set up to do the test. And what took place then?
I had questions about the man that I met this morning physically and in appearance versus the man I met yesterday. Mark was disheveled, and when I later asked him, have you had any alcohol or drugs in the last 24 hours, he said, yeah, I had a half bottle of Jim Beam last night. Well, he started to give me excuses why he wasn't going to take the test, and one of the questions that I needed to ask him in that pre-test portion of the exam is, do you feel well enough to take this exam? And he said no.
So he disqualified himself from taking a test.
He did.
At that point, you have to stop. In all of your experience, have you ever encountered a mother and father with a missing child that were unwilling to take a polygraph?
I have not ever had a mother and father refuse to take a polygraph in a missing child case, whether they were involved or not. I've had people that have failed and then taken us to the body.
What I will tell you is that It's my intention now to go back and talk to Mark one more time. I'm going to ask Jack to go with me. Okay, we'll be right back. I read some of the stuff you said about you don't think that we gave enough attention to finding Dylan yesterday. Are you kidding me? I am here to find your son. And I frankly don't give a damn whether you like me. I care whether or not we find this boy. On November 19th, 2012, Dylan Redwine disappeared. Neither of Dylan's parents is considered a suspect, according to La Plata County Sheriff's Department. If you have any information about the whereabouts of Dylan Redwine, please call 970-382-7511. That's 970-382-7511.
Good afternoon. I'm not
fully dressed, yeah.
Hey, you clean up good?
Well, that's what I've been told. I don't do this very often.
You didn't look so spiffy this morning.
You know, I should have asked you, are you suffering the effects of the Jim Beam or just not feeling
well,
good?
Well, I didn't have a lot of Jim Beam. When I say a half bottle, I'm not talking about a big bottle. I'm talking about a small bottle, like a pint-sized bottle.
So what was it that affected you to the point where we couldn't go forward?
Well, and I guess when you were asking me these questions and you asked that question and I responded to it and I gave you my answer, I guess I was expecting another question to follow that one.
It wasn't a question, though, Mark. It was a statement by me, and I said, well, that's a disqualifier. If you don't feel well enough to take this test,
do I feel well enough to take it? My response was no. And instead of having another question follow behind that, when you reacted to that and said what you said, then I was a bit taken by that.
Do you want to take it?
Well, I don't know that at the point we are right now with that question, I don't think that my answer is any different now than it was 2 hours ago.
So you don't want to take it?
Not if it means that my answer to that question is no, then, and it's no now. You know, maybe now isn't the time to be taking the polygraph test. And I believe that that's where we're at with that.
You should be doing backflips right now to take this polygraph test. You were the last person to have seen your son before he disappeared.
Well, and I don't believe that.
What do you believe?
I believe that the postal worker that saw Dylan later that afternoon before I went looking for him?
No doubt in your mind.
There's no doubt in my
mind. I read some of the stuff you said about you don't think that we gave enough attention to finding Dylan yesterday. Are you kidding me? I devoted 2 hours of national television time to try to find your son. And I have asked you to do things to eliminate yourself so we can direct resources to other people, and you won't do one damn thing to help. And you want to criticize what we're doing?
I think that was taken out of text, and yeah. I didn't have this
conversation. Well, then you put it in context.
I put it in context. I was referring specifically to the conversation that was taking place on the stage with you and my ex-wife together.
What you do with your ex-wife and what you do with your son, you've got years of history before you get here with me. Don't lay that at my feet, my friend.
I was upset about the fact that obviously there's a huge issue in terms of me and my ex-wife and my son.
I am here to find your son. And I frankly don't give a damn whether you like me or my television show. I care whether or not we find this boy. And if you've got information about where that boy is, you need to tell us. This man's done 3,500 polygraphs. You know how many fathers with missing sons have ever, ever refused to take a polygraph? In all of his years of doing polygraph work, you know how many have done what you've done? Zero. You, Mark, you're it. Do you know where he is?
No, I don't.
If you're innocent, we're the best friends you ever found.
Boy, I just struggle with this whole thing.
Thank you. Well, I think we took it as far as we can take it in the current setting. I have to say, we have no evidence that he has done this. We have no proof that he has done this. We cannot say that he is guilty in this situation. I mean, allegations can be made, suspicions can be made, but I cannot, in good conscience, sit here and say that he has been involved in the death, disappearance, harming, or whatever of your son. I don't know that. I can't say that. And to suggest that to America or this audience or anyone else would be wrong, because I can't say, because I don't know. You know, hopefully somebody seeing this is going to remember something that's going to give them information that will help bring about Dylan and information about him. And you are courageous and dedicated to be here fighting for your son and his return in whatever the circumstance may be. And I admire you for being here, Corey. I admire you for being here. We'll be right back with more information and specific instructions on what to do if you have information about Dylan Redwine. We'll be right back. Well, obviously, we're going to continue to follow this story very closely, and please join us in praying to bring this family some answers. And if you have information regarding the disappearance of this precious 14-year-old boy, Dylan Redwine, who is 5 feet tall with blonde hair, blue eyes, and around 105 pounds, please contact the La Plata County Sheriff's Office at 970-382-7511. That's 970-382-7511. And I'll have this information on drphil.com. So if you don't have a pen right now or you didn't get that, just go to the website and we'll have it right there. And thanks especially to Jack Tramarco. For more information on him, please log on to drphil.com and we'll have everything you would want to know about Jack Tramarco. And Jack, you've gone above and beyond. Thank you for disrupting your life and turning around and being here. We'll see you next time. Thank you so much. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Jack. Thanks, Jack.